Other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Thursday, May 15th.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Another boiling hot. This heat wave needs to go bye-bye.
I know, and they've been having fires too, like
I know.
San Diego area.
Yeah, in Carlsbad. I was there a couple weeks ago.
That's true.
Yeah, it's scary.
Yeah, they're saying some 9 wildfires are burning. And, you know, I mean, we do get fires every year and stuff, you know, and you have to wonder, how do they start, you know? If it's not arson, what else could it be? I mean, how does a fire start, you know, unless it's someone who's starting it, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Is it, like, just the heat with the... I don't know.
Yeah, because the conditions are like a perfect storm for a fire to take place, you know. Everything is dry, it's hot, it's windy, you know, all the elements are there. But that's to fan the fire. But how does it start? I get no idea. I have no idea. I don't get it, you know.
I just Googled it.
Yeah.
I don't think anything interesting is coming up. But to see if there's any answers, it's just loading.
Yeah,
but yeah, and then we'll the wind, I guess, just takes it.
Yeah, the wind really...
It says they can be started by lightning or a callous human who doesn't put out the campfire.
Right.
Or throws away a lit cigarette.
That's what I'm saying, you know. Person usually starts it, whether it's on purpose or not.
Right.
You know.
And just, that's true, though, just from, like, a lit cigarette being thrown into a bush, like, you don't think anything of it.
Right.
But then it can start. And when it's so dry like this and everything is just...
Right.
Just goes, shoo.
I know. And because fire needs oxygen and the wind provides plenty of oxygen. It needs something, you know, that can combust. And that is, like, all the dry plants and the bush and, you know, and all that. And the heat, you know, so all these elements bring on fires and that's what you get there. So it's pretty scary. They're saying about 1,000, how many people? About 1,000, thousands are ordered to evacuate. Schools closed and everything. So it's pretty serious, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, you have to, give a lot of credit to the, firemen, huh? The firefighters and stuff. Because, I mean, it's like to have just the courage to go into an area like that.
Yeah, I mean, just to go anywhere near fire.
Right.
That's just
and these are huge fires, you know, and they're fast moving and everything. Mm-hmm. And how do you put it out? I mean, it's just amazing to me.
Yeah, because you need the, I remember one of the first days I was in L.A., there was a fire in, I think it was around Pacific Palisades area. I was in Santa Monica, and you could see it, and you could see the planes dropping the water.
Right.
I'm like doing it with my hands right now. But you could see the plane and dropping the water. And I mean, on a huge wildfire, I can only imagine how many planes are like soaring above.
Exactly. And that doesn't sometimes put a dent in it, you know. They have to do it from the ground.
Right.
And so they have all kinds of techniques and stuff, you know. Sometimes the firefighters themselves will start a fire nearby to sort of like stop the big one.
Really?
Yeah. So that way they burn out all the brush and stuff, so the fire doesn't have anything to burn on. Yeah.
Oh, that's an interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that.
So there's all kinds of things that they do, but I still can't imagine how you put out fires like this. You know, how do you even begin?
Right.
It's bigger than life. You know.
Seriously, but I guess you're right. Getting to the point that it's going to get to, and trying to stop it from there.
Yeah. I don't know how they do that, but they do, you know.
Thankfully.
And I hope nobody gets hurt, you know, because it's a very dangerous job, you know, and you have to, that's why, you know, you have to give them a lot of support and stuff, because not just anybody could do that, you know.
No. I mean, I couldn't even imagine walking into a burning building yeah, to rescue somebody. Like, that just, it's, you have to, I think you have to be wired differently
right.
mentally to be able to want to. I mean, I know a friend that's, he's in Florida, and he's working to be a firefighter. And I'm like, you're crazy.
Yeah. I know, but some people like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they get attracted.
The adrenaline and... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they get attracted to it. Maybe also the fact that they can save people. You yeah. know, that's a rush also.
Definitely.
So I don't know, but... but yeah, so, you know, I mean, so we don't get tornadoes, but we get fires, we get floods, we get everything else.
Earthquakes. You know? We haven't had one of those in a while. Touch wood. Touch
yeah,
wood.
Yeah, I know. We don't need any earthquakes yeah. anymore. No. I know. Now I get like really jumpy, you know, every time I'm building, like,
I know,
like
right?
shakes a little bit, because sometimes you have those garbage trucks and they're like so loud that they sometimes make the car alarms go off
yeah.
and they shake the buildings.
And it's like, oh my God, is it another earthquake?
Yeah, I know.
I watched the on TV the other night. It was 10.0. I don't know how you say the name
here?
Of that. No, but it was a movie about what they expect
really?
To happen.
Oh, wow.
And it was,
I mean, a 10.0 would be like yeah. devastating.
Yeah. And then you see like a tsunami hitting it somewhere up north. Yeah. And you see the tsunami coming and it's like, oh my gosh.
Yo.
It's crazy.
Like, we really want to know about that.
Right? Yeah. I was like, I don't want to watch this. But I like real life stuff. I was interested.
Yeah.
But natural disasters scare me.
I know. I know. Yeah, it's bigger than us, you know.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do about it. But yeah, what can you do, you know? So, yeah, fires in California, I hope they put them out. They're saying the winds are dying down, so maybe that'll help.
Right, hopefully. Have yeah. you been keeping up with the Donald Sterling
Not
story?
Really. I mean, I just have, I had CNN on for a while, so I just kind of hear.
He is just getting more stupid. And
really?
I said yesterday, his publicist needs to be fired.
Really, huh?
Because, I mean, he just keeps saying, he said that Magic Johnson, he's like, what kind of role model is he, because he has AIDS, whereas he doesn't have AIDS, he has HIV.
Right.
But he, I mean, this is a longtime friend of Donald Sterling, and now he's in a,
wow.
an interview, the only interview he's done with Anderson Cooper, and just laying into Magic Johnson, and
wow.
then he's saying that he doesn't think the Clippers will rebel against him. He thinks that they still love him, and
yeah.
it's like, what planet?
So he lives in a bubble or something.
He does.
You know?
He definitely
wow.
lives in a bubble. yeah.
So he thinks he's okay. I mean,
yeah.
he's going all the way here.
And he's sorry for what he said. And he said in one part that his granddaughter was at school and they were handing out candy. And when it got to his granddaughter, they said, oh, we don't hand out candy to racists.
Really?
Yeah. And he started crying in that part of the interview.
Wow.
So that kind of showed that he... Well, it didn't even say. It was his backhand. I think he did apologize at some point, and the whole interview is kind of a strange way of saying sorry.
Right.
And trying to deflect his situation and go on to Magic Johnson and say, how is he a role model?
Right.
He has sex with a lot of girls and all this rubbish. Like, he just has to stop. He shouldn't be allowed to do interviews.
Yeah.
He just keeps
yeah,
digging
he should
his hole
shut up, right?
Deeper and deeper and deeper. It's like, please.
Yeah.
For
his
the sake
foot
of you now, just don't. Just
yeah.
don't do any more interviews. Yeah. But I thought that was sad about his granddaughter.
Yeah.
That they wouldn't give her candy. Because
wow.
it wasn't her that's. It's not her that's done anything.
No, of course not. You know, but it just shows you how they can. You know, just stay in the whole family name, you know.
Completely.
By behaving like that.
On this article on the New York Daily News, the first words of the article is, dream on, Donald.
Really?
Like, he lives on a different planet.
Yeah.
He really does.
That's true, yeah. And, yeah, the fact that you're famous like that, you know, you have to really be careful what you say,
completely.
What you do, you know, you have to, because people watch you, you know.
Oh,
people
yeah.
watch all the time.
And now he's already in the limelight for something he said, and he was caught on another recording saying, I'm not a racist.
Yeah, I heard that one.
Yeah. And I mean, see, to me, he's smarter.
Yeah.
He knows what he's doing. And I don't think all these recordings are just recorded.
So why would he let it out? I mean,
well, I think that one was more like, I'm not a racist, trying to defend himself.
Right.
But
he sounds,
he says everyone should get all the full facts first before being critical. But it's like, dude.
Yeah.
No.
Like Richard Nixon said, I'm not a crook, right? And he was the biggest one.
Right.
So, yeah, when you have to say that, then you probably are.
Seriously.
You know?
Yeah.
Wow.
And, yeah, and he just continues. I mean, just as I read more, he just continues to lay into more and more people. It's like, you just got to stop. You're not ahead. So just stop. Instead of getting further and further behind, just please stop.
Right.
Think for everyone's sake.
Yeah.
And it's not helping any of his case about...
No, not at all.
Trying to... I don't know if he'll keep... I hope he doesn't keep the Clippers. And I hope... Honestly, I don't think it should stay in his family.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, when his wife's been with him for that long, you know that he said things to you. And the mistress, Stiviano, had said that he said more things like that to her.
Right.
So it's all...
Yeah.
But I guess we'll never truly know what goes on behind closed doors.
That's
but
true.
He's not leaving much to the imagination because he lets everything out in these interviews he does.
Right. Yeah, well, to me, it doesn't bother me because I don't really care about him. You know, yeah. I don't know who he is or anything. So it doesn't matter to me. But it's just an example of a person that can fall from grace you know, by being like...
So quickly.
Yeah, like a lunatic, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah, yeah, you just don't say things like that, you know, even if you think them.
I know, and you just can't when you're in the public eye.
Yeah.
You can't say...
But that's the thing. He didn't know he was, you know. I mean, when you're in you know, your own home, you don't think twice about what you say, you know.
Yeah, I think there's more to it.
Yeah.
I think there's more to the whole story.
Well, I'll just say that, you know what? I have a feeling that she... sort of like subscribe to that too, because I can't see that he would tell her something like that if she was opposed to that kind of language.
Exactly. The way she was reacting was egging him on. It wasn't
really,
how dare you say that.
Right.
It was, well, these players are da da da. And it was just a very bizarre.
Yeah.
It's just the whole situation is just very bizarre.
Right.
Very bizarre.
Yeah. Oh, well, in a minute or two, we're going to have a guest calling in, and an interesting guest, I might add.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk to him in a few minutes. How was, so we haven't talked about this yet. You went to a wedding. Was it pretty nice?
Yes, it was.
Yeah?
It was beautiful.
What?
Very beautiful.
I mean, was it like a friend of yours that got married? Or
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it was friends. They got married. It was like in the outdoors, but it
right.
was very, it was just beautiful. It was
wow.
big trees and they're kind of quirky, so it fit in with them.
Yeah.
And there was like a river. It was just stunning.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
so people know
really
how
beautiful.
To pick out a location.
Oh, yeah.
Huh?
Well, I said to some of my friends, I was like, how do you find a location like this?
Yeah.
but it was stunning because it was by Temecula.
Okay.
It was out there, but it was just beautiful.
Yeah.
Very beautiful.
I've heard of Temecula. I've never been, though.
It's really good, apparently. I've never been wine tasting there, but it's like the Southern California wine country.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
We have a show that broadcasts from there. They go into wine tasting places every week or bars or pubs or whatever, and they talk about, you know, I mean, it's called Chords and Vines.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, so they do music and wine and
oh,
stuff.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So here comes our guest, and let's go ahead and take him. Good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, this is Carl Russo. Am I talking to Sam?
Yes, Carl. Good morning. Thank you for
good
calling
morning.
In. Thank you for calling in.
My pleasure.
Where are you calling us from this morning?
I'm in San Francisco, same time zone.
Oh, same time. Well, that helps, you know, because sometimes people confuse it and they call it a different time.
Is it nice and hot up there like it is down here?
We just got over a three-day heat wave. And in San Francisco, 98 degrees is like, you know, Death Valley to us.
Right.
Yeah.
Not even the hotels have air conditioning here.
Yeah.
Are you serious? Wow. Yeah. I guess it never gets that hot there, so they don't install ACs. wow. Yeah. So have you lived there all your life, Carl?
In the Bay Area, yes.
Oh, okay, cool. So you must like it, because sometimes people don't stay where they're born.
Yeah. Yeah, I really do. You know, I've been around a lot and spent a lot of time in L.A., but I think I'm more of a San Francisco kind of guy.
Cool, cool. Now, so you've traveled a lot from what I gathered from our exchanges. And what places have you been to? I mean, we're going to talk about Sicily and that in a second. But have you been to other places, too, to travel?
It's quite a lot around the Mediterranean countries of Europe, France, Spain, Portugal, down to Morocco, Greece, and Italy, and with a definite emphasis on Sicily. I love Sicily. I'm not Sicilian. I'm of Southern Italian mainland descent. Uh-huh. But for me, Sicily is it.
Really? So when you went there the first time, did you go to sort of find your roots, or did you just were you just curious about Italy?
Actually, I was under the mistaken assumption that I was Sicilian at the time. Okay. I didn't find out till later that I wasn't. But while I was there, I just fell in love with it. You know, for one thing, the beaches, to get your beach time in somewhere, you know, in San Francisco, of course, they're foggy, they're cold.
Yeah.
Down there, it's just wonderful. But also, you have a couple thousand years of various remnants of the civilizations that have conquered that island and left their landmarks behind. I mean, Greek temples and French Norman castles. It's just amazing. Wow. Heritage that has taken place there. And I just fell in love with it.
Wow. And that's a pretty small island, right?
Well, it is the largest in the Mediterranean. It's actually 10,000 square miles. So it's a pretty big one.
So it's larger than Cyprus then? Because Cyprus is an island, too, in the Mediterranean.
Well, I don't know the dimensions of Cyprus, but,
right.
Yeah, but they're saying it's always been called the largest island.
Oh, okay. Wow. Well, we'll take your word for it. And if it's been called that, then I'm not going to debate it at all. So, well, this is cool. So when was the first time you went to Sicily?
1999.
Okay.
And I've been back several times, and I have always really appreciate the fact that you only spend about a third in Sicily what you do on mainland Italy.
Really? So, it's that cheap, huh?
For budget travel, it's great.
Wow.
I'm all about low budget travel.
Sounds good. Yeah, I mean, if you travel a lot, you have to. Yeah. Now, do you have any idea how many people live in Sicily on the island?
About 5 million.
Oh, wow.
You know,
so that's
at the turn of the last century, you had this big diaspora, because it was always such a poor region. A lot of people left Sicily for America, South America, Germany, all over the place, really. So you find people with Sicilian roots really all over the world.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Yeah. And, of course, we all know of the Sicilian mafia that's been it's been pretty notorious here in the United States, if nothing else. And then you got involved with that. What? Tell us a little bit about that. What fascinated you with that organized crime history there?
Well, little by little, I discovered, just by meeting people over there and reading the local newspapers, that the Sicilian Mafia still exists. I just thought it was some old remnant of the past.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But no, in fact, it's still a threat. Most every shopkeeper, hotel, restaurant, car dealership, gas station, they have to fork over some of their cash every month to the local crime family.
Wow.
And I was pretty shocked, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew that back in the 1980s, the American mafia with its Sicilian roots had a strong connection exporting Asian heroin from the ports of Sicily into New York. Maybe you remember hearing about the Pizza Connection, where they'd actually traffic the heroin through pizza parlors on the east coast of the U.S.
Yeah.
And I knew that was busted up, but I didn't realize the Sicilian mafia was still a problem over there, including its infiltration into Italian politics. It's always behind the scene. You know, they love to play the middleman. You don't go and experience any direct mafia as a tourist. You never see it. You have no idea.
Right.
But in fact, they're there.
I see. Now, so how did you find out about that? I mean, was that like something in the papers, or did you stumble upon it?
Yeah, there was a big story. I was going there in 2006, and just the week before I arrived on the island, they caught the number one most wanted mafia fugitive. He was a godfather from the village of Corleone.
Whoa.
Which a lot of people associate with the Godfather movies and the Mario Puzo book. But in fact, it's always been a real mafia stronghold. The story was so strange because they got this old guy in this little cheese-making hut in the mountains that overlooks Corleone. And nobody knew he was there until the police discovered that his wife downtown in the old town was sending up clean laundry, exchanging it for his dirty clothes.
Wow.
So they put a surveillance on it, and when they were sure it was him, they rushed him, and he was a strange old guy. The cops came in, and he was smiling, and he had all these crosses around his neck and all these posters of saints on the walls, and real strange story. So that was an international story. That made the papers here in the States and all over the place. And there were some photos of this little shack. And that's when I decided, oh, you know, I got to see that little shack. This is so weird. And I drove to Corleone, and I asked around. And a couple of days it took me of asking these uncomfortable questions till somebody directed me how to find this. Right. And the police were still there. They were digging it up. I caught some photographs of it when the police weren't there, and I decided, you know, there are a couple of other mafia-related places I just got to see. One of them was where they supposedly gunned down the Robin Hood bandit, Salvatore Giuliano, back in the 1950s. He always had worked for and against the mafia. And I realized, you know, there's no book that has all of these locations. So now I don't know if you mentioned the title of my book.
Not yet. Go ahead.
Okay, it's called The Sicilian Mafia, A True Crime Travel Guide. There's kind of two books in one. It is a concise history of Cosa Nostra, going back 150 years, but it does have more than 200 photographs of where these locations are. Now, this would be that guy's, the godfather, Bernardo Provenzano's little cheese-making hut, but also a lot of murder sites,
wow,
where the crime bosses lived, where their victims are buried. I did a lot of wandering through cemeteries to find tombstones.
Wow.
And it covers the western half of the island. So it is a tour guide and a history book. So even if you're never going to go to Sicily, you really get the feeling that you're traveling there because I've collected all these photographs.
When you were traveling and asking these questions and asking locals, like you said, awkward questions because it's about the mafia, did you feel uncomfortable at any point?
Absolutely. I tried not to ask, but, you know, sometimes all I had was a little mention of a certain piazza, town square, or maybe I had a photograph of some old home and I just couldn't find it. So a lot of times I would just finally have to ask somebody, and I kind of came off as a tourist. I didn't say, I'm an author, I'm writing a book about the mafia. I just said, you know, well, hey, where did the old historical godfather live? Ha ha. You know, and most of the time they would show me because they know that, you know, Americans are always kind of interested in the mafia for numerous reasons, mainly because the stories are so strange and bloody and you know, the evil involved. And there were a few times where I ran into some problems, not with the mafia, but with the police. You know, I found out the hard way you don't take a picture of a police station. You know? Over there, they're paramilitary. They carry submachine guns. So on two occasions, I was actually interrogated on the street. But, you know, again, I came off as a sort of a clueless tourist, and they let me go, fortunately.
Wow.
Oh, man. That's one thing about foreign countries. You know, you don't know what you're up against, and then suddenly you realize, uh-oh, I'm doing the wrong thing here, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, the police over there, well, at least, you know, some decades ago, they had a penchant for torture. So
really?
I didn't want to see the inside of a cell. I'm not casting aspersions now, but, you know, it's best not to find out.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, very interesting. So, and you mentioned the Cosa Nostra, and you mentioned that a moment ago. What is that? Is that like the name of the...
Cosa Nostra literally means our thing. It's our thing. You know, they don't use the word mafia. They wouldn't consider themselves mafiosi. But it actually came out in an American gangster. He was a lower-level gangster. The Valachi papers, Joseph Valachi, sort of exposed that little phrase that they use, Cosa Nostra. And, you know, it kind of fits. It is our thing. It's our arrangement. And it's something that we keep to ourselves.
Right.
Do you find it just so intriguing? Because I said this on yesterday's show. I've been watching a lot of the bios on a lot of the old gangsters recently in the past, like, week. And I find it so intriguing. And now to talk to you about the mafia in Sicily. I'm so intrigued.
Yeah,
it is very intriguing, and I know I was never a true crime buff or anything, but the fact is that their twisted morality, they sort of have a perverted Catholicism. They actually, even in recent years, have been found to still conduct the old initiation, where they will take the little card with a saint's image on it and poke the thumb of the initiate, smear the blood onto this card, set it on fire, and the initiate holds this burning card in his hands and has to say, you know, may my body burn like this card if I ever betray,
wow,
you know, the organization. And they have, you know, a Ten Commandments sort of thing. Thou shalt not commit adultery, even though the bosses all have mistresses on the side. You're never seen in public. They go to church. They will contribute to the religious festivals. They'll also shake down the religious festivals for money too. So it's a real strange sort of morality that they have.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm sure they have their own justifications for that.
Yeah.
But my God, you know, it's been a problem. So, do you have any idea at what point the Italian mafia started operating in the United States? That must have been some time
ago.
Well,
it goes back, you know, some of the early European drug traffickers, the Corsicans, outside of France, were refining heroin. It was going into Canada, going into the States. But really, it was the Italians, through Lucky Luciano, who was Sicilian-born but grew up in the States and, of course, got rich during the bootleg era of Prohibition. And he went back to Sicily after he was deported after a jail sentence, and he tried to impose an American-style mafia rules on the Sicilian mafia. And this was 1957 when he gathered all the bosses, the young ones, the old godfathers, in a hotel in Palermo, and talked them into coming up with this hierarchy and getting into heroin. A lot of the old-timers said, no, we don't want to deal with drugs, until they realized just how filthy rich they could get. Everyone has their price, and for those guys, yes, it was all about the money. And so at that point, the Sicilians took over the international heroin trade, and you can truly blame the Sicilian mafia for starting the heroin epidemic in America and in Canada, because that's where it started coming from.
Wow,
very interesting. In northwestern Sicily during that time, a bunch of heroin refineries sprouted, and so they were bringing in Asian heroin and doing the refining there and then shipping it across to the States.
And it's still, the Sicilian mafia is still up and running right now?
Yes, but they've lost their international pool. There are other mafias, particularly three mafias on mainland Italy. Two of them are actually stronger than the Sicilian mafia. That would be the area of Calabria. If you're looking at a map, the boot of Italy where the toe is, that's Calabria province. That mafia is more powerful, more vicious. They're called the 'Ndrangheta. And they've actually been found to be bringing cocaine. Just this year, there were a bunch of busts. They're bringing cocaine from South America into Europe, so sort of a reverse pipeline from the old ways. And they have completely infiltrated Spain, Germany, Canada. So they're everywhere. And then the mafia of Naples, which is a little further north, that's called the Camorra, which is just as old as the Sicilian mafia, but that, too, has gotten more powerful as they infiltrate legitimate businesses, not to make money, not to make profits off of these businesses, but just to launder their money, because they're now considered to be more profitable than all of the EU countries combined.
Wow.
Mafia is Italy's largest business, unfortunately. You know, it's all illicit business. But that's how powerful and how rich they've gotten.
Yeah. And politicians can't do anything about it, huh?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of them have become so implicated and completely corrupted by mafia money.
Yeah. It's
very easy to corrupt a politician because, you know, you can promise all of the votes of the people that you control in your village or your city district in exchange for political favors once the senator or whomever gets put into office. And then there's a real symbiosis there. The mafia bosses are able to get their hands on a lot of the public monies, you know, to build bridges and hospitals and so forth. And they're able to control the hiring. So that's how they keep the people enthralled to the bosses is by doling out jobs. And there's one fugitive, the most wanted fugitive now, is a guy by the name of Matteo Messina Denaro. They think that he's still in Sicily, and he's hidden so well because everyone in his area of Sicily really owes their jobs to him. He's gotten very rich. It's sort of a new mafia now. They're more like individual entrepreneurs. You don't have that cohesion of the old organization like you used to.
Yeah.
Wow.
Very interesting. Well, Carl Russo, the book is The Sicilian Mafia, A True Crime Travel Guide. And do you have a website where people can find out more?
I sure do. It's mafiaexposed.com.
MafiaExposed.com sounds like a great domain name to me. And so I'm sure people can find links to the book and everything there. I understand you have a lot of photographs there that you took as well?
Yes. In fact, I ended up with so many photographs that a lot of this stuff that didn't fit into the book is on the website. So check it out. And the book, of course, is available on Amazon.
Sounds great. Well, and when did you publish the book?
Came out February 1st of this year.
Oh, wonderful. Great. Congratulations on
your
new baby. Carl, thank you so much for this enlightenment. It was it's very interesting.
You
know, a lot of information that I didn't know about the roots of the mafia. And so thanks for enlightening us on that this morning.
All right. Thanks for having me on the show, Sam and Charlotte.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you, Carl.
All right. Bye-bye.
Wow.
I know. And it's amazing the fascination we have with mafia in this country, you know?
It is. I mean, I'm looking at some of the photos on his website now, and it's crazy because the past week I've literally, I mean, one day I think I watched five in a row.
Wow.
They're all hour-longs. But I watched one where it was in Atlantic City. It was based in Atlantic City, and the main guy bribed
the politician.
Yeah, the politician. So they were working together.
Really?
So he was giving him money for anything. And I mean, this mobster ran the whole city.
Yeah.
And it's just, it gives me shivers. Yeah. It's like, oh my gosh, I didn't know this stuff existed.
I know. I mean, people do all kinds of stupid things, I'm telling you. In the paper yesterday, I was reading that Israel's one of the former prime ministers, I mean, that's like the president. Okay.
Yeah.
Is going to go to jail for 6 years for, you know, taking favors from companies and people.
Oh my gosh.
And you have to wonder, you know, I mean, come on, you know, and it's not a lot of money. There was like 100,000 or 150,000. You know, I mean, to think that people are not going to find out, you know, how can you be like a prime minister if your judgment totally sucks?
Completely.
You know?
But that's what I find so crazy about these mafia and gang stories is that, I mean, the amount of people that died in each of these bios or whatever they documentaries was just insane.
Really?
But they just paid off the cops. And I mean, there was one cop that stood in court and vouched for the main guy that, oh yeah, I'm his alibi.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's like, I mean, pretty much, and I don't know if it's still like this now, but money got them so many places.
Yeah.
And it's just
Money always does,
right?
It always does, you know. And the mafia has still not been vanquished. You know, I mean, they still have a lot of that kind of activity going on around the country. You know, and they get into different things now. It's more like electronic stuff, you know, like illegal gambling sites and you know, and of course drugs and all that stuff. But, yeah, when they take over a city or a country or something, what do you
do? Exactly. Yeah. You can't do anything.
Yeah.
Unless you want to get killed.
Yeah, because the politicians become involved and bribed and stuff. So that's what's going on in Mexico right now. In fact, they're saying they're deploying their military to fight in some towns that are totally taken over by drug gangs.
Wow.
And Yeah, I mean, those drug gangs are really violent, too. You know, I mean, you're talking about thousands of dead people.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just a couple of dozen people.
And I didn't really understand that. I mean, when these drug gangs, they're taxing all the people.
Right.
That's what I didn't know.
Right.
Because I knew about all this stuff, but I didn't really truly understand.
Right.
That every person that buys the drugs is being taxed, and it all goes. And obviously, because it's illegal, they can't go to the cops because they're the ones buying the drugs.
Right.
And it's like, wow, it's just a vicious circle.
It really is. You know, they take over people's lives, and then they take protection money from businesses and stuff. Like he mentioned, restaurants and things like that. And
right.
Yeah, and if you want to stay in business, you got to do it. Mm-hmm. You could see it in The Sopranos. I don't know if you ever got into it, but it's an amazing, amazing show.
I haven't, no.
You got to watch The Sopranos. I mean, they've been like 6 or 7 seasons, so there's a lot to watch, but... Yeah, I'm telling you, if you watch the first one, you'll be hooked.
Really?
Yeah, it was such a great show. It's been considered one of the best shows ever on TV.
Is it a comedy or?
No, not
at
all.
It's about the
mafia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's about the mafia in New Jersey and New York, Italian mafia. Mm-hmm. Almost every scene is around the table eating, you know? I mean, that's how Italians are, you know?
Yeah.
They eat a lot and eating is a social thing. Mm-hmm. So you see that all the time. And you're just seeing different kinds of gangsters where the main guy is kind of likable, you know? So you like the main character, but you realize this guy's pretty mean, you know?
Yeah.
You know, he's pretty cruel. He doesn't care. So, right. So yeah, you gotta check out
at least the
first one, yeah,
right.
And see what it's like. But I didn't watch it when it was on air. I watched it on DVD later,
mm-hmm.
And so there was a lot of catching up to do.
I definitely need to check that out.
But yeah, after you watched all those shows, you'll probably like it a lot.
Yeah,
yeah, and you know, I mean, they're pretty brutal on there, you know, and I think it's pretty accurate what they portray there.
Exactly.
Yeah. And definitely entertaining, let me tell you.
Scary business.
They've got they've got some great cast on that show too. You know,
awesome.
Like totally stereotypical Italian guys from New Jersey,
right?
And stuff. You know?
I have to watch that.
You have to watch it. I'm telling you. So, what else? So we were talking about the wedding, and I wanted to ask you, how old were they? The
like
couple.
30s.
Oh, in the 30s, okay.
Well, early 30s, around 30, somewhere
I see.
Around there.
Okay, because I thought if they're your friends, maybe they're in their mid-20s or something.
No, they're friends of a friend. So
I see,
it's
okay.
Like the early 30s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I can't imagine getting married at like 25, you know. That's too early, you know. And many people do, you know,
yeah.
Right? I mean, mm-hmm. They have friends. Do you have any friends that are married and pregnant now that were in college with
I do.
You?
I have friends that, yeah. Yeah, I do.
Yeah. You see, that's what I'm saying. I mean, some people just can't wait. And I think what happens is if you don't put yourself out there first, you know, before you commit, I think you'll always wonder what it would have been like, you know. And so I think people should really get it out of their system, you know, whether it's partying or just dating many different people and things like that. You know?
I definitely think you need to get whatever you need to out of your system, for sure.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the time it's the men that need to,
right.
And obviously women do too, but I think it's men that need to, if you settle down at 23, 24, they haven't really experimented as much as they need to.
Exactly, yeah, you know, I mean, and what's the rush, you know, wait till you're 30 or something. You know, I think in your 20s to be committed to someone for life is just too long, you know. I don't know, man. I don't know. I mean, my parents have been together their entire marriage, and I've been divorced twice, and I don't see myself getting married again, you know. But it's like you got to find someone, though, you know.
Yeah.
You don't want to get older alone and stuff, so...
Well, you have your kids, so that's good.
That's true, but they're moving away,
yeah.
You know. My daughter just told me she's going back to Humboldt. She went to Humboldt. That's a college. It's a university up north.
Oh, cool.
One of the biggest partying schools ever because it's in marijuana country up there, Northern California,
gotcha.
And stuff. So thank goodness she doesn't smoke or anything, not to my knowledge. Yeah, in fact, she was there and she left after a semester because her allergies and her asthma were acting up, and she couldn't be there.
Wow.
So she moved back here, but now she says she really wants to go back. You know, she still got friends there and stuff.
Yeah.
And the school will take her back. So she figured, you know, I'll just
go back to school.
Yeah, and just take whatever medication to help me with the allergies,
right.
And maybe that'll help.
Yeah, hopefully.
You know? Yeah. So that's, you know, I mean, and that's sad. I don't want to see her go. You know, I'm not going to see her as often. My son is also considering San Jose State or San Francisco. And
so they'll be both up north.
Yeah.
At least you'll be able to go visit. And it's
exactly.
Not like one's on.
Yeah,
on
and
the
that's why they're
the
not
country.
Going very far, you
yeah.
know. So they only tried schools in California because they don't want to be too far away from the family and
yeah.
stuff, you know. So we'll see, you know. But they're both leaving. And, you know, I mean, I see them once, twice a week, you know, but so it's not like they live with me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure their mom's going to miss them more. But at the same time, I'm so used to having them here, you know.
Right. If you do want to see them, you
yeah,
can.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You know, even though they're so busy with their friends and their lives and stuff now, that it's not the same, you know.
Yeah.
So sometimes when you see pictures of them being real young, it's just like my son texted me a picture on my birthday, or was it Mother's Day? I don't know. He found this picture when he was like 5-6 years old, you know, and we were together in the pool on a raft and stuff. And it just like, I mean, it brought back a lot of emotions for me,
yeah.
you know, because those were like great times, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. those are times when you're like a god to your kids, you know.
Yeah.
And I remember he wouldn't leave my side. He would constantly, like everywhere we'd go, he'd have to be like in physical contact with me all the time,
right.
you know. He just felt so great, you know.
Yeah.
And my daughter, the same way, you know, we've always been very close and stuff. So, so to miss those times is pretty emotional for me because I like kids, you know.
Yeah.
I like kids. And so, but they grow older and they become people and grown men and women, and it's not
right.
the same, but it's
no.
but I guess it's also cool because they become more like your friends and stuff, you know.
Definitely. I mean, now my mom's my best friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like they're just your parents and you mm-hmm. can't communicate with them and stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and my daughter's turning 24 next month. You know, it's time for her to move out, I think. Don't you think?
Some people live with their parents for a long time.
They really do.
Well, I guess I moved. It doesn't really count because I moved countries, but I was 17.
Right.
But I was always the
that
person.
That does count a lot.
Well,
it counts even more if it's a country. Wow. Because that's far away, you know. I mean, I moved here at 16 to a new country alone. I had some relatives that I lived with for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I mean, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, don't minimize it.
True.
Mean, it changed you forever, right?
Definitely.
Yeah, you see, that's what I'm saying.
I'm a lot more mature, I think, than for my age.
Yeah,
because of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because you had to look out for yourself and survive and that sort of thing, you know, and you don't have your parents there to take care of you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different kind of thing, you know.
That's
true. You progress more, yeah. I don't know why I suddenly got a craving for French fries and ketchup.
Ooh, that sounds really good.
Doesn't it sound good right now?
Yeah,
how did I get that craving?
I'm always down for fast food.
I know. I'll have to
but
stop
French fries
at McDonald's.
Don't have to be, oh, French fries from McDonald's are the best.
Yeah. I don't know if they're the best, you know, but they're good.
I love them.
They're good. I know a lot of people love them, but I've eaten some great French fries, and I don't know why suddenly I get this craving for fries, hot fries and ketchup. So maybe I'll
go
get
some
of the way. Do you
like garlic?
I do love garlic, yeah.
You're going to have to come to where I waitress because we have the best garlic fries. It's torture working there. It really is. I'm working
really?
A double today.
And you have to smell it
and,
all the time.
Oh, my gosh. It's
wow.
painful because we get an employee meal.
Uh-huh.
So when I work a double, I get two.
Right.
So I get lunch and dinner.
Uh-huh.
But I really have to try. I try now just to eat one because it just kills me.
Really?
It's pasta, pizza, garlic
wow.
fries, like all this amazing. And everything is just so good. I mean, we do have salads, but they're also 10,000 calories because
yeah.
of everything they put in them. But it's so hard
wow.
not to eat. Garlic yeah. fries sounds so good.
Wow.
And pizza and pasta. It's just, it's amazing food.
Yeah, I know. I know. It sounds good.
My self-control is just not,
yeah.
non-existent.
Maybe you shouldn't be working.
I know. I know. I can't wait. Like, I till I don't work in the restaurant industry, I'll lose so much weight.
Yeah.
Maybe back to how I used to be. I just don't have self-control. And then I'll say, well, I'll really try today. I won't eat. And soda, too. I drink so much Diet Coke when I'm there because it's just from the fountain. But
yeah. I know. So you sometimes work double shifts, like back to back?
Today I'm there till 9 p.m.
Wow.
I leave right after here and then I'll be there till 9.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a long day, huh?
Long day.
Wow, you bust your ass. I admire that. You know, I mean, many women that I've seen live here and they don't do a thing. You know, it's like, hey, I'm an actor and I don't work. I don't do anything else, you know. Yeah. And that's pathetic because they're poor and, you know, they're constantly complaining. And you can't live without working, you know. You gotta work, you know.
And even, I mean, I could probably live without working, to be honest, but I need money. Right. Like, I'm just scraping by, pretty much.
Right.
And I need, like, I want to work more, so I make more money.
Right.
So I can go shopping.
I know. Well, you'll get there. I mean, you're pretty young. You're just getting started, you know. So, so there's a lot to look forward to and stuff for you.
Definitely.
And I don't have any sympathy for people that don't work and then they complain they have no money.
Right.
You know, I mean, go out and get a job, you know.
Yeah.
And then you get all these fast food workers that are, I guess they're like, they walked off their job, some employees from fast food restaurants.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they're going on strike, you know. I guess they're having a union or something. I didn't realize that fast food workers had a union, but I guess they do. So now they want to jump from $9 to $15 an hour.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I mean, you know
that's
they're not going to get it. And, you know, I mean, yeah, you're working for McDonald's for crying out loud, you know. So for McDonald's to make $15 just to pay you is a lot of money.
It's ridiculous.
You know, and
just sit and take a to-go order.
Yeah, and not only, so that's what I'm saying, you know. I mean, look, on the one hand, I feel bad for them because they're not, it's not like a respectable job. Well, you know, any job is respectable, I think. But at the same time, you know, it's usually kids that are starting out, you know, or people that are in retirement or something, you know, and they go back to work. You don't get a lot of, like, people in their 30s, 40s working there as much, you know, maybe not even late 20s. So it's mostly, like, kids after school and stuff.
Yeah.
They don't need $15 an hour, you know, not for that kind of work. You know, I mean, my son makes that kind of money, but he works for a school. He doesn't. You know, and that's his first job.
Exactly.
So it's not like he's saying, I'll work.
And you don't need a degree for that. I mean, some of my friends from college have a really good degree and now have a job, but they're not making that much money.
Yeah, yeah. Because that work does not really require a lot of skills. So, you know, when someone like, for example, I don't know, a bookkeeper or something will make $20 an hour, how can he possibly make 15 if you're selling hamburgers? It just doesn't, you know, it doesn't compute for me. So
sorry, that made me laugh.
No, it's true, though. You know?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for today. Tomorrow's Friday.
It is. Then it's the weekend.
Then it's the weekend again. I'll take it.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
All right, everybody. Have a great show, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Day.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte right here on LA Talk Radio.